So we stopped the tradition five last week on purpose because six and seven go so well together. And I want to read the long form of tradition six. I would count the words, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. It's the second longest long form. Six and nine are the killers when you have to read the long form. But I'll read six now. Problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our spiritual aim. We think, therefore, any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary aids, as such, I'm sorry, an AA group should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals as well as other places of recuperation ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one. This is a tough tradition in today's AA. There's no doubt about it. I often think about the simpler times. I mean, Bill wrote the 12 traditions in 1945, 46, and he thought AA was complicated then. I mean, AA in 2022, we have all kinds of complications. But what do we mean by this affiliation? Let me give you a simple example. And know that I say this. I'm on the board of directors of a large homeless mission in the United States. I'm on the board of directors of a recovery-related organization. But when I'm an AA, I wear my AA hat. So I'm not anti other organizations. I'm not anti-recovery organizations. I believe that we cooperate, of course. But let me give you an example of what affiliation might really look like. So I'm at an AA convention. I'm sitting on the dais because I'm speaking that morning. The chairperson is at the microphone. And I can see in the back that there are a lot of people working in the kitchen. They just are. And the chairperson gives his remarks and then says, "I want to thank the men and women of the so-and-so house for doing service this morning." And an announcement like that breaks my heart on many levels. Because number one, those people are there doing AA service. And I want them to know the difference between what is AA and what's not AA. I also want to recognize their AA membership. Like, why not say the men and women of the so-and-so home group are doing service in the kitchen this morning? Isn't that the real announcement? And how confusing it can be for the newcomer. I told people all the time that when I moved in 2015 and I had the little anonymity, you know what that means? Some of you probably know what that's like, you know? You know what it's like to be the guy that none of the newcomers want to talk to because they know that you are going to tell them something they don't want to hear. You know what it's like to be that person. Everyone knows when you're that person. But I loved having a little anonymity and talking to some young guys outside the meeting. And, you know, I would often ask them, you know, what's their home group? And some would say to me, like, oh, it's the meeting at the house on Thursday night, or it's the meeting at the house on Monday night. And I'd just probe and say, what do you mean the meeting at the house? And they'd say, you know, the meeting at the recovery house where I live. And I'd just have to be like, well, you know, it is really awesome that your recovery house has an AA meeting there. And it's really awesome that the alumni sometimes come back. But that's not an AA home group. Because it's too easy for the newcomer. And there's no other tradition where it's more important than what I'm going to say right here. A sponsor's job is not just to take someone through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyone who's had a spiritual experience as a result of the 12 steps can do that. We're talking about being a member of a society of alcoholics in action called Alcoholics Anonymous. And letting newcomers know that you sponsor what AA is and what AA isn't is super important. And probably no place more important than Tradition 6. You know, people say all the time, when is the right time to introduce the traditions to a newcomer or to an AA member? Here's what I would tell you. And remember, I believe the following. The steps are our message. The traditions protect our message. And the concepts perpetuate our message. But I would tell you that when you get a real sponsee, not somebody that you bumped into at the clubhouse who always asks someone to sponsor them and never calls them. I'm talking when you get somebody, some real newcomer. Often the first questions they ask you are about the traditions, not the steps. They just don't call them the traditions. But they might ask you, do I have to believe in the same God as the people where this church meets? Do I got to believe in that God? They might ask you if they have to believe in God at all. They might ask you how much it costs to be an AA member. Like, what's the set amount to put in that basket they saw going around? They might ask you, who's the president of this place? There must be somebody really in charge. And even though you'll give them very basic, probably, answers, and you won't use the word tradition, you've basically started talking about the traditions. And none more important, probably, than Tradition 6. I want to read through it here because I want to give the example of what was going on in the world at that time in AA, because I think it's important for everyone to understand that, why some of this language is there, and give modern day examples. We think, therefore, any considerable property of genuine use to AA should be separately incorporated and managed. Any considerable property. Well, like AA World Services, that's considerable property. That's separately managed. How about the AA Grapevine? That's considerable property. That's separately managed. Except those are AA service entities. So what are we talking about here? Well, if you happen to live maybe in Dade County or Broward County or Palm Beach County, or I could give some New Jersey examples. If anyone's from Monmouth County, they know a place called the Shorelon Club, right in Belmar, right across the street from the boardwalk. Maybe you live in Florida and you've been to Crossroads. Maybe you've been to the Oasis Club. Those are clubhouses. Clubhouses are not AA. Clubhouses are owned by usually a nonprofit organization. A lot of times, AA members are on that board. But the clubhouse itself is not AA. It's a separately incorporated business. Most clubhouses rent space to 12-step fellowship groups. An AA group can meet at a clubhouse, but the AA group and the clubhouse are not the same. The AA group pays rent just like it would in a church or a community center. It's not affiliated with the clubhouse. It's simply a tenant. I don't have a lot of time to dive into it tonight, but a lot of confusion arises out of baskets and clubhouses. I would tell you this. There's a couple of different models. So you just have, oh, you know what? I hate to make this announcement, but I'm going to make it. There's a couple of people sent me a message, and so I'm just going to ask for cooperation. Even though I appreciate it to some people, because a lot of people are on camera, emojis such as liking my comments or loving my comments or other things are distracting to certain people. And I can tell you that even if you threw a dart at me because you didn't like what I said, I'm not saying it because I can't handle it. I'm saying it because some people feel that it is a little distracting. And so, whatever. But let's talk about the model of money. You go to a clubhouse tonight and a basket goes around. Where's that money go? I would tell you, if you're having that question, you just need to dive into it a little bit. There are some meetings that are basically called clubhouse meetings. They're not really home groups. They're just meetings that take place at a clubhouse. And usually the money collected in the basket just goes right to the clubhouse to pay rent. That's a popular model. There are home groups that meet at clubhouses. Those home groups usually pay rent to the clubhouse, a set amount of money. Or in some clubhouses, it's a percentage. Like 60% of what was collected goes to the club. That's the rent. And the group gets to keep the 40%. And in some clubhouses, it's just a weekly fee that they charge the home group. But I would tell you, if you go to a meeting at a clubhouse and you don't know if you're a home group or you don't know where the money goes, those are important questions for you to know. And I'm not anti-clubhouse. We just went through Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving. You know how many Alcathons were held at clubhouses across the United States and Canada? You know how many new people and old people with nowhere to go who didn't want to go to their families? You know how many of them were welcomed into Alcathons that took place in a clubhouse? I'm not anti-clubhouse. I just want to make sure that we speak in a way where we know what the clubhouse is and what the AA group is, and that they're not the same. Same thing for meeting names. We should not name meetings after the buildings we meet in. They're not even good nicknames because it sends the message to the newcomer that it's kind of the same. Oh, that's the St. John's Hospital meeting. No, that's the one day at a time meeting that meets at St. John's Hospital. And let's talk about today's AA. Good old Zoom. How many people do we get on a meeting and hear people say, oh, this is my Zoom home group. Oh, I didn't know we changed the literature and suggested you have two home groups now, one in person and one digital. And I'm not anti-digital. If your home group is digital, that's awesome. But are we doing the right thing having one home group? And this term, I'm going to a Zoom AA meeting. I would argue there's no such thing. I would argue that platforms like Zoom and WebEx and GoToMeeting.com and FreeConferenceCall.com are locations. They're virtual locations. And what we can help the newcomer with is by saying the so-and-so AA group located at the Zoom address and ID. So that it's clear that Zoom is not a type of meeting. Because it can be confusing for the newcomer, because if you go to the AA group pamphlet, we only have two types of meetings, open and closed. And then we have special purpose meetings, and I could go into it, but we can have all of those meeting types on Zoom or in a church basement or in a clubhouse. But we want to make sure that we're, you know, sometimes we get so caught up with wanting to be an expert on the traditions or the concepts or God knows what else, even the steps. That's great if you want to sit across a diner table with someone who's 20 years sober like you are and split hairs on the finer points of page 83 in the big book. That's great. But we're talking about welcoming the newcomer. We're talking about keeping it basic and welcoming and simple, God forbid. And so that's why I say for Tradition 6, it's just one of those things where it's so important what a sponsor does. I'm going to go to Tradition 7. Long form. So if you have your service manual with you, please go to it. The AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their own members. We think that each group should soon achieve this ideal, that any public solicitation of funds using the name of Alcoholics Anonymous is highly dangerous, that acceptance of large gifts from any source or of contributions carrying an obligation, whatever, is unwise. Then, too, we view with much concern those AA treasuries which continue beyond prudent reserves to accumulate funds for no stated AA purpose. Experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. So let's talk about one of the worst kind of common statements in all of Alcoholics Anonymous. We need you more than your money. That is a complete lie. I don't know who invented that statement. I don't know who made it up, but it's not true. See, we don't take other people's money. So we actually need you and your money if you have any. But we don't care if you don't have any. If you don't have any, we don't care. Now, it's almost as if in Alcoholics Anonymous, the calculator is illegal. Because our basic math beliefs are so upside down. Often, we blame the newcomer for our money problems. So we blame, on average, the poorest group of people inside our fellowship for us not having enough money. I mean, that is just completely insane when you think about it. That we expect the person who has no extra disposable income whatsoever, it's their fault that we don't have enough money. I would argue you might want to take a walk around the parking lot. See how many Harley Davidsons are out there. maybe a couple of BMWs, maybe a Tesla, just to keep things interesting. Maybe a couple of Lexuses. I don't know. Our money problems in AA are not caused by the person who doesn't have a car to drive to the meeting, or is taking the bus, or is 3 years behind on child support payments, or God knows what else. We have a self-support problem when members who have become self-supporting in their own lives due to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous forget what actually gave them that very life. And it's become popular over the last 20 years to just put the same amount of money in every AA basket. I don't know how that happened. Maybe because we have a lot of meetings. So everybody thinks I need to put the same amount of money in every basket. Or maybe because people don't want to let people see them not putting money in a basket. So they put money in every basket just so they look okay and cool. I like to describe it as like having a house. Now, I'll plead guilty that I was raised by wolves. They did the best they can. They were well-intentioned wolves, but wolves nonetheless. But my mother and father did pass on some positive traits to us. I don't know where they learned them. One of them was, you never go over someone's house as a guest without bringing something. I don't know where my mother and father learned that, but I've known that since I've been like 4 years old, since I could remember. And for my mother, a Depression era Irish Catholic woman, single parent a lot of the time of my life. If you grow up in the Northeast, you probably heard of a bakery called Entenmann's. Entenmann's is not a fancy bakery. Entenmann's is a large bakery that sells a lot of cakes. In fact, no matter where you live, you might go to Publix, you might go to Trader Joe's, you might go to wherever, you might see some Entenmann's cakes. They sell them in volume. And actually, my mother would actually go to the Entenmann's thrift store where you could buy cakes that had expired dates because they were cheaper. But my mother would always bring something. Now, my dad, he would always bring beer or liquor. That was his MO. And if you came to my house tonight and you brought something as a gift, that would be nice. And I would simply say thank you. But I would not tell you had to vacuum the carpets. It's my house. That's my responsibility. I would not tell you that this is your share of 3 hours of the mortgage for the month. I wouldn't tell you that either. Like, I invited you here. You might volunteer to do a few dishes before you leave, which is nice. But it's my house. It's my responsibility. That's how we should look at our home groups. See, the long form says the AA groups themselves ought to be fully self-supported by the voluntary contributions of their, T-H-E-I-R, own members. Home groups are supposed to be self-supporting by their own members. Now, before we have a million people run out of here tonight and said, Billy said, don't put money in any other basket, please listen up. That is not what I said. What I said is your home group should be able to survive just on the contributions of your members alone. If I visit your group and I put $2 in the basket, that's like my mother bringing Entenmann's. I'm just being a decent guest. or my dad bringing a six-pack of Michelob. I'm just being a decent guest. What I am saying is this, because I don't believe it's anybody's business in AA how much anybody puts in a basket. There's 238 of us in this meeting right now. I would tell you that it's 238 unique situations of what you put into your home group's basket. What I would tell you to do is this. Keep track of how many meetings you go to for a month. Keep track of all the money you put in AA baskets for a month. And at the end of that month, look at two totals. The total money you put in AA baskets and the amount of that money that went into your home group's basket. My experience is most people, including myself, when they take a hard look at that, I realize I've been shortchanging my home group. I realize I've just wanted to look like a big shot or somebody at every meeting, so I just put $2 or whatever in every basket. And meanwhile, I'm not really self-supporting for my home group. I would encourage everyone to just take a hard look at that, about keeping your home group self-supporting before you're passing money anywhere else. There's lots of home groups and lots of AA entities with too much money, and I'll just pass this on. There's no worse excess budget spenders than alcoholics. There is no doubt about that. We can get by with very little money. I mean, let's face it. We can get by with a cell phone and a lighter. Like, that's the alcoholic survival kit, right? Like, all I need is a lighter and a cell phone, and I'm off, and I'll survive. But any AA group or entity that has too much money, boy, we've never seen a special project that we don't like more than when we have too much money. We need a new computer system. We need a new this. We need a personally carved wood podium with perfectly chiseled circle and triangle with the name of the home group that's stained in a perfect color. I mean, we will find a way to spend money. And that's awesome. But we should be responsible. And we should have a prudent reserve. For a long time, the General Service Board, I'd travel as a trustee. And at certain events, people would tell me, Billy, why does the board hoard so many millions of dollars? Why do they need all those millions of dollars in their reserve fund? Isn't it a little excessive? Isn't it a little crazy? And I would tell you, thank God. Thank God we never kept too much money there. But thank God we kept enough money there. You know, a lot of people don't understand just how serious your General Service Board and AA World Service Board take the responsibility of not only the reserve fund, but the budgets in general. And I will give you a couple of examples. If you were to look at AAWS's budget from about 1999 up till today, you would notice that in 2002 and 2003, very unusual that AAWS lost money. Both those years, a lot of money, a couple hundred thousand each year. But it was on purpose. As AA, WS and the General Service Board left the last century into this century, it was clear that the reserve fund was way over 12 months. And it stayed way over 13 or 14 months for over a year. And we take the responsibility of not having too much money so seriously that not only was AA World Services budgeted to lose money 2 years in a row, But the first printing of the fourth edition Big Book was a dollar cheaper than the last printing of the third edition Big Book. See, that's what the AAWS board and the General Service Board will do. If they have too much money, they will decrease the price of literature, including the Big Book, which they had to do in 2002. They will also budget one of the corporations to lose money if they have to. We only keep about 12 months. Now, I'll tell you this honestly. Might that need to change in the future? You all know better than me. You know better than me. Maybe it shouldn't be 9 to 12 months because we needed $4 million in the early pandemic days, and thank God we had it there. But when we ask the fellowship for money, the fellowship gives. That's my experience. If you ever get a chance to go to the General Service Office, I will give you my view of AA running out of money. When you get off on the 10th floor and you see all the stuff in Serenity Prayer in different languages, and you can tell people who are there for the first time because they have tears in their eyes as they get off the elevator. And there's a conference room, goes right back up against the window. Hudson River is behind you. The George Washington Bridge is just to your north. If you're facing the elevator, it's over my left-hand shoulder. And the way I look at Alcoholics Anonymous is we don't have to worry about running out of money. I'll have an artist paint a picture of me for me one day. It'll be looking at the George Washington Bridge at night, seeing a row of cars with their lights on going all the way across from New Jersey to California. And the great thing about those cars is none of them are Brinks trucks. None of them are dropping off a couple of $100,000. I know what it's like to look at an index card at GSO with three quarters taped to it. Three quarters. That means it cost us more to open the envelope, enter the contribution, send a thank you, than the 75 cents. But that's how spiritual money is to us. But the idea of making a contribution is not about the amount. It's about participating. And it's about contributing and not donating. We contribute to Alcoholics Anonymous. For a long time, and sometimes very small amounts each month, I've sent donations to Stepping Stones and Dr. Bob's House because they're not AA. There's a rescue mission that I like to donate a little money to. But I contribute to Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a big difference between contribution and donation. In May of 2020 or April of 2020, my accountant called me and said, Billy, you better file an extension for your taxes because the world is very crazy right now. We don't know what's going on. And so I filed an extension in October of 2020. He sent me an email and said he needed my account number and my routing number for my checking account that my taxes would due in like 2 days. And I paid them. But I assure you, I did not make a donation to the United States Internal Revenue Service. I contributed. You know, the IRS is not on my list of charities I like to give money to. Now, here's where it becomes difficult, and here's where hair splitting causes us problems. And I assure you, I am going to take the time that you deserve to go through that service manual. And I'm going to try to point out places where we like to split hairs. And I would tell you that hair splitting is not productive and not effective. And I will point out some examples. AA itself is not a charity. It's a self-supporting organization. However, if you sit on your intergroup board, or you sit on your area's, maybe your area is a nonprofit corporation, or maybe you are a trustee or a director on AA Grapevine or AAWS. If you are on an AA service committee that has a nonprofit corporate entity, see, the rest of the world doesn't always match up with AA. Like, if you went to the state of New York Attorney General's office, it's the division of charities that watches over nonprofits. Alcoholics Anonymous is monitored by the Attorney General's Division of Charities. That does not make us a charity. That's just how we fit into the regular outside world. And sometimes people get so caught up because the legal doesn't match the spiritual. And what I would try to tell you is don't worry about it. A lot of times the legal and spiritual language will never match up, because our spiritual world, our fourth dimension, is very different than the legal and bureaucratic world that we live in. So somebody could say AA is a charity, and I'd say you're right. Somebody could say AA is not a charity, and I'd say they're right too, depending on how the word is used and where it's used. But when it comes to the seventh tradition for firing line AA, we're not a charity. We're just a self-supporting group. So I am going to go to tradition eight quickly. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or higher. But we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform these services for which you might otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. So a couple of things to say about this tradition. What do we define professionalism as? The occupation of counseling alcoholics for fee or hire. That's what we're talking about, being non-professional. We don't do counseling for alcoholics. We're not therapy. But we do employ workers, sometimes at intergroup, sometimes at the general service office. And they're not doing service. But sometimes you'll call a general service office employee. And at the end of it, I know many people who've had this experience where you say to the employee, thank you for your service. And you really mean it. Or you go to a regional forum and you meet somebody at GSO you've been emailing with, or you talk to on the phone and they really helped you out, and you can't help yourself and say thank you for your service. A lot of those employees naturally just turn around and say, oh, wait a minute. This isn't my service. This is my job. Like, I do my service at my home group. That's where I do my service in AA. And that's for the AA staff members who are employees. I've never been an employee there. I've only been a trusted servant. And we have to pay them well. Remember how I told you, I know it's AA is filled with paradoxes. I mean, we are just like one paradox after another. So much so it could drive us crazy. And I'll tell you one of those paradoxes. You remember how I said that alcoholics can always find a project when they have extra money to spend something on? Yeah. except paying our employees fairly. Then we seem to be the cheapest people in the world. Then we seem to be like the worst possible employers anyone could ever have. And it's bad on so many levels. It's bad on an employee morale level. It's also bad on a spiritual level. And this happens more at intergroups than I would say the General Service Office and the AA Grapevine, because we do compensation studies and we're always looking at, are we paying in the range of what other people who work for other organizations get paid? But sometimes when you don't pay somebody enough money, they feel like they should be paid another way. And one of the common ways you see in Alcoholics Anonymous is a paid employee will think, well, maybe my voice should count for more since you really don't pay me enough to work here. Maybe I should have extra votes in what we do here because you really don't pay me fairly. Like, we really should pay our employees fairly. And it's just a bad thing for Alcoholics Anonymous. Whenever we think somebody owes us, we've thought as alcoholics, a lot of us, that people owed us our whole lives. And the employees who come to work for us, they don't owe us anything. We owe them to be a fair employer. We owe them to get the retirement benefits they would get if they worked somewhere else. We owe them to get them the best medical insurance that they would get if they worked someplace else. That's what we owe them. Now, there is a line here that I always get myself in trouble with a lot of other speakers in AA. So, you know, why should we change that today? The last line, and listen, a lot of my friends give me hell for this. I did not write this long form. I wasn't even born when it was written. I had nothing to do with it. But it says, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. That's a pretty strong sentence. That is a very strong sentence. So if you tell me you're a sober coach, that's great, but I don't want to hear that it's the same as a sponsor. I'd want to know that there is some kind of difference between the two. Or if you work in the rehab business or the counseling business, and you have letters behind your name and you're a professional and you're accredited, that's awesome. I think it's great. But if you're charging people to take them through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know. I read this last line of the long form of the eighth tradition, and it's pretty clear to me, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. And again, I didn't write it. The only other thing I would throw out there is this. There's a lot of affiliation with six, and, you know, you could say we don't affiliate with anything, but traditions eight and six kind of affiliate with each other. If you do work in the treatment world, and I know many great people who do, who are excellent AA members, but what they do really well is they wear one hat at a time. Just simply one hat at a time. They're never an AA member and a counselor at the same time. They're either the one or the other. It would be like me going to an AA convention and saying, you know what, by the way, I work in construction insurance. Might you be building a dam or a tunnel next year? Because that's kind of like my specialty. And like hoping that somewhere in the 1,000 people that I'm speaking, there may be somebody building a dam or a tunnel. I don't have any right to do that. But neither does someone who works in the counseling field. If you're at the podium for Alcoholics Anonymous, you are there as an AA member, not representing any facility, not as a professional. And let me talk a little bit about flyers. There are a lot of AA events where we might invite a professional to. If you would like an example, I can give you one. A probation officer, a judge, a doctor, a nurse practitioner. Maybe we're having some kind of event talking about cooperating with the professional community. And if those people have been invited to that event in their professional capacity, you should use their title. They're not there as an AA member. But when you invite an AA member to participate at an AA event, I don't care if they're the President of the United States. They don't get to use their title. Titles go out the window when you participate as an AA member. Now, I want to say this with all respect. We have some members that could fall into each category. And good for you if you're a judge or a parole officer or anything else. But you have to pick which one you want to be when it has to do with participating at an AA event. Then it's up to you. I'm going to stop there. We'll finish the last four next week. I'm going to take some questions. I think there are already some questions in here, so I am going to go to those questions. Oh, I just want to read this for everyone because, listen, I know that there's 231 of us here, and I know, listen, I learn as much from the questions as anyone else. Just let everyone hear this because I think it's important for us all to hear. I won't say the person's name. They just say, I'm blank, a deaf alcoholic. I just wanted to say thank you for having closed captions and ASL. I appreciate that so much. Well, to the person who sent that, I am so glad you're here. And if I have to do this for another 20 years, until a deaf alcoholic shows up at the General Service Conference as a delegate with their ASL translator next to them 24 hours a day, I will do it for the next 20 years. Because whether you speak Spanish or French or some other language, or you are somehow have some disability or you are deaf, you should have the same ability to become a delegate or a GSR or a DCM or a corrections chair that I had. And we have a lot of work to do along those lines, but thank you very much for your comment. Okay. How to handle a bloated group treasury. Group expenses of minimal, Zoom bill. District and area are well-heeled. And the prisons and treatment facilities have ample literature. Here's what I would tell you. Take a look at your local intergroup. See how they're doing financially. Take a look at your libraries. Maybe they don't have a big book inside them. Maybe your libraries don't have an AA comes of age. Maybe your libraries don't have it to pass it on. I would tell you to ask your delegate to give you a good view of what's going on at AA World Services and the General Service Board, how much of the reserve fund has been paid back. It's still hard. We took $4 million. It'll take us a little while to get that back into the reserve fund. Maybe a group could make a one-time contribution to the General Service Board. But please talk to your delegate about that. And thank you for the question. What do you feel about one home group helping out another home group within the same district if they are going through a rough time financially? I think it's a really, really dangerous idea. Each group is supposed to be fully self-supporting, and we have too many groups now. That's been a fact for a bunch of years now. We have too many groups. We have too many meetings and not enough groups, actually, to be perfectly honest. If you're telling me that a group needs a one-time loan from another group, I'm not sure it's my position to say it's not okay. But it would be hard for me to not believe that AA members couldn't support their own group. I just think the hardest question we don't ask ourselves is, does this group need to continue? And if you're going to start a new group, make sure that it's going to be fully self-supporting, because you're going to double your bills and cut your revenue whenever you start a new group. In local, I think they're talking about service. One of the AA members who works there gets paid government benefits. No loophole in my county's government benefits. How does this fall into being paid for 12-step work? I really don't understand the question, but the person who asked that question, it looks very detailed, and I hate to give answers that are, especially when we're dealing with paid employees, but I am going to put my email out there, and the person who asked that question, please send me an email and I will be in touch with you. Do you encourage monthly contributions to your home group, regardless of the number of meetings you attend? I love, love, love this question. Yes. Yes. I'm so glad that most groups take some form of electronic. You know, I used to go crazy at the General Service Board and AAWS meetings, because I remember one time I told them we had gone out to dinner the night before to an Italian restaurant. And, you know, if you've ever been to New York City, or maybe it's like that where you live too, you ever go to a restaurant where sometimes when you're outside the window, you can't really see in because there's a sticker for every type of credit card they take? You ever been to a place like that? Like, you can't even see through the glass. It's like Discover, Amex, MasterCard, Diners Club, Visa, American Express Traveler's Checks. Like, you can't even see through the window. And I remember one time I said to the other board members, like, you know, the place we went to dinner last night, you know what they don't care about? How they get paid. They just want to get paid. Unlike us, we want to make it hard for everyone to pay us. We want you to basically bring a wheelbarrow full of rolled quarters to, you know, 119th and Riverside Drive, and we'll pick up your rolled quarters. Like, thank God in the last 2 years, we've entered at least the 20th or 21st century. And I think it's made it easier for our home group members to feel like they're fully self-supporting, to maybe send a monthly contribution instead of worrying about putting money in the basket. So I think that's an excellent question, and I think it's a great idea and something that's great for many groups. Spiritual experiences being bought and sold. If one cannot 12-step for money, can I get 12-step by somebody who's getting paid? I would put that into the buckets of the only two kinds of AA business I believe in. My business and none of my business. And I am going to put that question absolutely in none of my business. I am not going to tell you that you can't get a spiritual message from somebody being paid. I can tell you that I don't think you should be carrying the 12 steps while you're getting paid, or being paid for carrying those steps to someone. I believe they were meant to be for fun and for free. And I believe the eighth step says, the eighth tradition says clearly, we should not be paid for our usual 12-step services. So, How do we ensure low-income people can participate in service? I get locked out because no car and no money for travel. Seems like we lose. Oh, I love this question. So the first person or people, group of people that I'm going to pick on are the people who believe that they hold the service position and they should not turn in receipts because they make enough money and it's their kind of contribution. I just want to tell you that you're hurting Alcoholics Anonymous by doing that. And what you're doing, because we set most budgets each year, and what we do is look back at the previous year expenses and say, okay, let's annualize that, add 10%. Here's what I want to tell you. If you're fortunate enough to not need to be reimbursed for service, I'm sure there might be a few of you who are. But here's what I would ask you to do. I would ask you to submit receipts. And if you really don't want the money, put it in your group's basket the next time you're at your group. If you got reimbursed $40 for mileage and you don't want it, great. Your group would love it. And then if your group has extra money, they can contribute it to service entities. But what I don't want is I don't want someone coming after you to serve who thinks that because they couldn't pay for the bills themselves, they shouldn't serve. So that's the first part of my question or my answer. My second part is this. We should not be asking people to do service if we're not going to pay for their expenses. That should part of being a self-supporting home group. When you figure out your home group's expenses, they should include sending people to the quarterly or the assembly or the area committee meeting. If it requires a hotel room because it's a long drive, getting one. We really should be doing that. Economic condition or position in society is never supposed to be a barrier for service. That is not the service structure that Bill W. put together. All of us are supposed to be eligible to serve. I'm so grateful for Zoom. We are so lit in our area when it comes to traditions and concepts. Okay. I appreciate the person who said thank you. What do you think about recovery houses that have their employees do the first three steps with their clients? Isn't this essentially AA for hire? Yes, of course. I don't think it's a good idea. I love recovery houses. I think this about it's supposed to provide the basic three things that a human being needs every day: shelter, food, and clothes. And then it's supposed to allow them to develop a foundation in a 12-step fellowship that can help them with whatever problem they have. And I think it would be better if they went to an AA meeting and found somebody at AA to take them through the steps. And to get an AA home group and an AA service position. But again, I'm not blaming the people who are taking those people through the first three steps. Because there's probably someone in AA with 10 or 20 years who's hired those three people to take the rest of the people through the steps. And that's the trap in AA today. To get lured into working in the recovery world. And I'm not saying the recovery world is bad, but if you have less than 3 years, I think washing dishes is better than working in recovery. That's my personal, honest experience. There seems to be a new trend in AA. That self-supporting is connected to emotional sobriety. meaning we don't depend on others for our well-being. Have you heard of this? Listen, I've heard of every possible trend in Alcoholics Anonymous over the last 35, 37 years that I've been here and in and out of here. I've heard people bring the recovery Bible in and say that when you're ready for phase two recovery, you'll be ready to go through the recovery Bible. That's great. I've heard people say that CrossFit will take you to a new level. I've heard people say that if you go to an ashram in upstate New York and go to this particular yoga instructor who weaves in the 12 steps, that that is an incredible spiritual experience. I have heard people, what was it called when I first came in? It was called like ESP or something like that. I've heard of Landmark Recovery, the forum. I've heard of just about everything. And what I would say is good old AA works best. That's what I would say. This thing about emotional sobriety, I just want to make sure that I read the end of your question right. We don't depend on others for our well-being. Have you heard of this? Well, yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being self-supporting. And there's no doubt if you're not self-supporting, it's going to affect your spiritual life. There's no doubt about that. And maybe someone has told you, but I have not heard about its tie to emotional sobriety, so I am going to just pass on that. What are your thoughts on an AA home group funding travel and expenses for a GSR to attend service-related conferences? I think it's great. I hope the group puts that in their budget every quarter or every year. I love that your group, it doesn't matter who gets elected, they know they have the money to go and to serve. I think if more groups could do this, we'd have more GSRs at more assemblies. The problem is we have too many groups, and because of that, too little money in each group. And then we have assemblies that have been going on the same way for 30 years. And nobody's looked to take a look and maybe change it to make it more affordable for the group. So I think there's all kinds of things we can do. My former home group elected a woman who works in a treatment center to be the literature person. Their group conscience approved a role to include taking big books in 12 and 12s to that treatment center without going through the local H&I committee for the cost of those books. I see this as wearing two hats at a time. Well, you don't need glasses. You're seeing correctly. I just want to let you know. You are seeing it exactly as it is. There's actually some good suggestions in a couple of our service material pieces. If you work in a treatment center, you should not be acting as an AA member or AA trusted servant in that treatment center where you work. It should be kept completely, completely separate. I'm not saying if you work in the treatment world, you can't do treatment service. Of course you can, but not where you work. You can't wear two hats at the same time. What are your thoughts on area committees that way outspend their budget when they know the area has excess funds and ask for it at the assembly and promote members giving additional voluntary contributions to their committee? I don't know what your area's policy is. I don't know if they have authority to spend over their budget. I don't know if they have to ask you for permission. I know that we tend to be very poor financial planners as an organization. And that might be an understatement. We might be the kind of people who think, well, we'll just add up all the expenses and we're going to make that the revenue for the year. That is not called budgeting. That is called bankruptcy. They are two very, very opposite things. We should be financially prudent. And if your area officers are overspending their budgets, then I would tell you that the people in your area need to stop people pleasing. Don't bring it up here. Bring it up in a microphone the next time you're at your area committee or area assembly. Bring it up there. That's where it needs to be brought up. And I would suggest that you find out what is the policy for spending extra money. Do they have to come back and get permission? Or are they just allowed to do it? So. Please give us an example of spending down hoarded District 7 tradition referred to as our prudent reserve. Well, I don't know what kind of district prudent reserve you have. I know that I think that every couple of years, every service entity that has a prudent reserve, from group to area to H&I committee to inner group, should take a look at what should their prudent reserve be. The prudent reserve you need today is not the prudent reserve you needed 5 years ago. It might be less, it might be more, it might be the same, but you should look at it. If you have excess funds, then I would, you know, not spend it immediately. I wouldn't just like let somebody make a motion at a meeting. I would, over a couple of months, talk about what AA entities maybe need that money and let the group make the decision. So I got a meeting about who pays for the ASL. So let me just explain this. For the people who are in here right now, we might as well be on my backyard picnic table. This is not an AA group. This is not an AA meeting. An AA group allowed us to use their Zoom platform, and they will be paid for that. But this is not an AA group or meeting. This might as well be a big book step study on your sponsor's back porch. So next week, I will put my Venmo out there. If you feel like sending $3, go ahead. But this is not an AA meeting or an AA group. So I just want to make that clear. All the seventh tradition meal that I've read talks about money, no emotions. Anyhow, not arguing. I think it's wrong. I don't know what you mean by emotions. I read some literature that talks about that you can contribute with other things besides money. You can let me tell you this example. One of my favorites. I know some of you have to go, but here's one of my favorites. I love when somebody calls me and says they want to go to a convention, but they can't afford it. I'm going to give you my experience. I've given people like that the same answer for years. I'll say, is there an email or a phone number on that flyer? And they'll say, oh, yeah, there's an email or a phone number. And I'll say, well, this is what I would like you to do. I'd like you to call that person. I'd like you to tell them that your name and that you're an alcoholic. I'd like you to tell them that you're going through a lot of financial trouble right now. I'd like you to tell them that you'd really like to go to this convention that they're putting on. And that you'd like to know, is there any service you can do to work off your registration price? Can you show up there at noon on Friday instead of 7 p.m. on Friday? Can you stay late on Friday night and stack some chairs and clean up? Can you show up early on Saturday and do the same thing? My experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is I've never told someone to do that where it has not worked. The problem is, what do we usually have in AA? We usually have an AA Billy showing up with his, you know, $150 new sneakers and his latest jeans and his two packs of Newports in his pockets and some shirt on that cost $100. And I didn't show up to do service, but want to tell you there with my two packs of Newports that I don't have money to pay and AA is free. So why are you charging? That's the kind of attitude that we run into in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you do hold an AA convention, what I would suggest for you to do is to have a lot of meeting directories at your registration table. So when the person shows up who says AA is free, you can remind them, you're right. And here is a list of free AA meetings. This is not an AA meeting. This is a special event where we had to rent space at a hotel, where we had to pay our bills. So it's a difficult world out there, AA service and AA money. I don't know what you mean about emotions, but I would love to have you tell me that sometime when we run into each other. I was taught to contribute yearly to GSO the amount of money in years of sobriety and also my home group. Yeah, I wouldn't say that that's a good barometer anymore. I'm 32 years sober. I know what I send as an individual contribution. I don't think you should send the same amount, but I definitely should not send $32. That's a fact. I think you should base it on your personal income, your financial condition, and what you think you can afford. What would the tradition say about an intergroup using contributions from AA groups to purchase or resell AA, resell Hazelton literature or Al-Anon literature? Well, this is an age-old question. I don't believe that intergroups should sell anything but AA literature. But that's me, right? There's a lot of people who think different. What I would tell any intergroup that sells other outside literature is don't become dependent on it to pay the bills. If you're dependent on anything but contributions, you do not have a sustainable business model. You have an unsustainable business model. And even as we go forward, the more things become electronic and digital, the less and less book revenue and profit GSO and AA Grapevine and intergroups are going to make. If you tell me 10 or 20% of your bills are paid by literature profit, that's great. But if 70 or 80% or more of your bills are not paid by contributions, you are going down the path of a very unsustainable business model that will eventually crash. Now, we could go to the affiliation page. If I walk into an intergroup and you are selling Hazelton, we're not talking about Billy with 32 years. We're talking about Billy with, like, I don't know, 27 months and out of a correctional facility and really doesn't know a lot about AA. And maybe that looks like it's AA to me. The other problem I have with outside literature, especially in today's recovery world, and I'm not picking on Hazelton, I'm picking on all outside literature, is a lot of it does not talk about a spiritual experience anymore. It's not 12-step based. And the only program of recovery we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is 12 steps. So I think it's confusing to the newcomer. But again, that is my view, not everybody else's view. So that's it. I'm going to ask everybody tonight, please. I think I can get through 9, 10, 11, and 12 in at least half the time next week and go into the start of the service manual, especially the chapter on the GSR. But please read the conference charter, please, before we read the section on the GSR. I have my new service manual with me. I am looking for the conference charter.
Page 115.
What did you say, 115?
Yeah.
Exactly. Original conference charter, 115. Please read that for next week. And thank you, everyone, for being here tonight. Thank you, everyone, for your service to Alcoholics Anonymous. Please email D if you need a service manual. We're able to pick up a couple of extras. We're not trying to be an intergroup. We really want you to support your intergroup or your district. We just understand that some people might not have an intergroup close by. If that's the case, email D. Otherwise, we'd love to see you out. And you know, I'd say this too. If you've never been to your intergroup office, you should go. You should walk by. You should step in. You should thank the people who are doing service there, answering the phones. Even thank the people who are working there. Maybe not for their service, but thank them for working for Alcoholics Anonymous, and become familiar with your local intergroup. So that's it, everyone. DI will close with the responsibility statement. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. And thanks, everyone, for your happy anniversary messages.